If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, at the end of the last episode, you said something that piqued my interest, something that you'd hidden from me. You had
that
made
I hid from you.
Well, I knew for a while that you were sitting on all of these Lego kits, these kits purchased with the help of our supporters at the Friends of DeSoto. This was sort of like the thing to make right the destruction of the Millennium Falcon, because as soon as we made that a stretch goal for last year's Max Fun Drive, there was a not insubstantial amount of people who were like, you're not just going to destroy something beautiful and then throw it away, right? Like, those pieces are good for stuff. Well, here's the thing. You can't donate used Legos.
No. You could probably donate them to like a Goodwill or something.
Yeah, like a thrift store would take them. But like something that Ben and I care a lot about was making sure that these went to a children's hospital.
Yeah.
I care deeply about children's hospitals and the work that they do. I was a patient in one for a very long time as a kid. So they are near and dear to me. And so, Ben, what did you do to accumulate all of these kits? And then what did you do with them?
So my idea initially was there's like a very little Millennium Falcon Lego kit. It's like 60 pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that we could kind of maximize the Millennium Falcon love by getting a lot of those.
Mm.
But I think that kit has been discontinued because I'm pretty sure I bought all of the remaining stock of that Amazon had. And I followed the prices of these kits on Amazon for a few weeks until I spotted that they had kind of noticeably dipped around some holiday sale. I can't remember exactly what it was, but we dropped about $1,000 on Lego kits, and I just got as many Lego Millennium Falcons as I could, and then as many other kind of small to medium sized kits as I could, because I was going for quantity because I figure a lot of kids probably go through these hospitals and need stuff to do and ways to entertain themselves. So that's kind of the great thing about a Lego is that you build it and then you've got it and you can play with it. So I was thinking a huge kit that takes multiple days to put together is probably not an ideal thing for that. So I went for quantity and smaller kits, and two huge boxes showed up at my house. And
that's awesome.
The way the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles works is they have just like drop-off days where a couple of volunteers hang out outside the hospital with like a tent set up, and you schedule a time to come drop them off. And
wow.
And so I went down there, and I basically just had like the entire trunk of my car was full of Lego kits. And when I got out of the car, I think they were imagining that I was going to be dropping off a few things. So they had boxes out front, and when they saw what I had, they were like, "Oh, come with me." And they brought out like like a huge laundry hamper, like one of those, you know, like that you see in like production. So, so that we could fill them up with these Lego kits. And
that must have felt so good.
Yeah. Like they were really thrilled. They wanted to know like what gives with all these Lego kits. And I was like, oh, you know, my friend and I have a podcast and we did a fundraising stunt where we broke a huge Lego kit and we thought this would be a good way to kind of to spread the love and also to give back for, you know, the folks that contribute to our show. And they were like, well, we hope you think of us in the future. This was really tremendous. This is not the typical drop off. So thank you very much. And I left feeling really great and I hope those kits are, you know, something that raises the spirits of sick kids.
Yeah, I hope so too, man. When I was little, I was in a children's hospital for a long time. And like one of the things that you really crave is your own thing, your own thing to play with, because so much of it is shared. And so like all these little kits I know are going to be a really big deal to a lot of the people there. One of the things that I do when I can is like, I don't go through a lot of video game systems,
right?
But when I was a patient, there were very few of them in the hospital that I was in, and you had to like schedule them very far out for the hours that you could use them.
Oh, wow.
And what I have done over the years is every time I think to buy a new game system, which isn't often, again, I will just take my old game system and all of the games for that system to a children's hospital.
Man, that's the way to do it.
And donate that, because that's so many hours of something to do for a sick kid. And
yeah.
I don't know. I just think that's the right thing to do with it. Like, I'm not going to take it to a GameStop and get $30 for the trade-in value. Like, I'm going to take it to a hospital and it's going to get used and loved. So
yeah. When I was about 13 or 14, I had a, like a fairly major abdominal surgery, and, my best bud had a Nintendo 64, and he brought over the Ocarina of Time Zelda game. And, you know, I had like a 2 week recovery where like just moving around was really painful for me. So
yeah,
he just brought that over, and like for days and days we played that game together. And that's a really like cherished memory for me. Like I don't remember how painful it was. I remember how much fun I had with my friend playing that game. So
recovery can feel like it takes so long, but in the way that like sitting down to play a game like Jazz Horse is a time machine, like where the hours just drain away from a day, like those, that's what you want to have happen when you're in the hospital or recovering from something. So like the gift of a video game or a thing to put together like a Lego kit, I think is really perfect.
Yeah. And when we came up with the idea of Destroy the Falcon, we looked into like, okay, once we smash this thing, what do we do with the Legos? And the idea of donating them was in our heads, but hospitals cannot take unwrapped used toys for the reason they can't be sure that these things don't have vectors on them.
Right.
So that, you know, on behalf of their patients and protecting their safety, especially if they're immunocompromised, like they just want like brand new kits, and Legos are always something that they're looking for. So
hilariously, when we dropped the Millennium Falcon, every last brick was taken by an audience member. So there would have been nothing to give anyway.
We dropped it off the stage at our Los Angeles live show this past year. And yeah, we kind of, I think you and I both were like, okay, well, at the end of the night, like it's going to be the two of us squatting on the floor of this venue, like picking up little bits of Lego. And that was not the problem. Like people took all of the Legos, and we signed a bunch of the pieces, like some of the chunks kind of stayed together, and people came through the meet and greet line.
When we loaded into the venue, we were fully expecting to flinch at the confetti deposit that we'd have to pay to do something like that in a venue, because that's not unheard of. Like when you make a mess in a room during a performance, like
right.
you're on the hook for that.
Yeah. Okay. A lot of the shows that we do, we have to like sign something that says we won't use a fog machine or whatever. Like they,
and many of them don't want us to give out stickers either for right. that reason.
Yeah. And the venue in LA was super cool about us just doing
yeah, like
something
they were
weird.
Fans of like they were geeking out over the kit and talking to us about it. It was like that was a fun show. They yeah. were good people.
I really can't wait for people to see that video. I don't know if it will be out by the time this episode is out, but we have all the parts shot now, so we just need yeah. to get it edited.
Well, shot and edited both is the episode we're here to talk about today, Ben, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing season 5 of episode 20 It's a good thing episode 21 of season 5 was complete when we watched it. Yeah. I think that's the way its director LeVar Burton would have wanted it. It's Soldiers of the Empire.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Martok is back on his bullshit. He was throwing guys off the second story of the promenade in the last episode, but we didn't even get to see him. This episode, he is in the infirmary with a stab wound that he claims was inflicted during some, he was like cross-training in the Hollow Suites.
Another 3 centimeters to the right and you would have severed your brachial artery.
Yeah, I thought maybe the guy he tried to throw over the railing stabbed him in the process.
Yeah.
Because then you could understand, it's like a throw off the railing by self-defense.
Yeah. I would love to see the medical scene where, you know, those weird scissors that they have in hospitals to like cut your shirt off so that they can get at a wound?
Uh-huh.
That like the kind of like offset scissors with the like weird little tab at the bottom of the blade so that it doesn't accidentally stab you.
Right.
How would that cope with Klingon armor?
I don't know. You get a lot of flavors of that armor in this ep too.
Yeah.
A lot to think about.
Bashir is pissed off that Martok is training in such a way that he would sustain an injury like this. And Martok kind of rolls his eyes at Bashir because one of Bashir's primary concerns is all of the blood getting into the carpet of the infirmary.
Your observation is noted.
I'd never really thought about what the floor surface in the infirmary was, but the Cardassians are idiots.
Yeah, it's a really bad move. It's like, have you ever visited someone's house and they've had a carpeted bathroom?
Oh, so foul.
It's really fucked up. Like, clinics should have floor drains.
I feel like that, like, old ladies choose the carpeted bathroom.
Yeah.
Because old ladies don't know what mayhem the rest of us are, especially younger men are inflicting on the floors of bathrooms.
Yeah, you know, to your point, I will say every instance where I've encountered a carpeted bathroom has been in the home of an old lady. Yeah. So that's how it is.
Yeah. Old ladies don't have aim issues. Old men do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not... Think of every hospital you've ever been in also.
Yeah.
Or clinic. Like there's no, that's a carpet-free environment.
Yeah. The carpet is got to be just teeming with the most heinous bacteria in that infirmary on Deep Space Nine.
Two like, things you don't get in a Cardassian infirmary, carpet or drapes.
Is there an episode of Deep Space Nine that's like the outbreak or the contagion episode?
Mataba is only spread through direct human contact. Now, you said that yourself, Sam.
I know what I told you, but now I'm telling you we're facing a new strain.
I love a disease outbreak film, and I feel like if Star Trek is a place, the one about the crazy super virus that started on Deep Space Nine because it's such a place of cross-pollination between different alien cultures... That would be interesting.
I bet. I mean, is this too obvious to think that the reason that every set is carpeted in Star Trek is because of diegetic sound?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be it, right?
It deadens the space and it makes it a lot easier for, like, when you're a boom op, you have a choice of having the microphone being below the frame or above the frame. And, mm-hmm. like, you typically think of the boom op as having the microphone above the frame. And more often than anything else. The reason for that is not for the boom op's comfort, but because if you have a directional microphone below the frame pointing up, it's very likely to be pointing at an air vent and getting that sound also. So,
or a light fixture with a subtle buzz to it. Any number of things are happening up above.
Yeah. So having the mic be up above and pointed down and presumably at carpet just beyond the mouths of the actors you're trying to mic is the ideal configuration.
Every non-floor surface is also sound reflective in Star Trek II. Like nothing is acoustically, like there's no sound deadening. And you know what? I'm going to walk that back. The transporter room set on the Enterprise D had acoustic tile on it, right?
It did, yeah. It had a lot of texture in it.
Yeah, that's what you need. But that explains the carpet.
That's why O'Brien's got 3 smash hit R&B albums.
Yeah. So Martok is sent away with that stern suggestion by Bashir, but you know he's not going to listen.
Yeah. He heads right to Commander Worf, who is working with Cadet Nog on something on the Little D, which I feel like we haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, I agree. If you're going to get a big and a little doing automobile maintenance, Worf is too big to be under that panel.
That's not it. Bring me the hydro spanner.
Nog could be just sitting on the ground instead of lying on his back.
Yeah, it seems like it might be better for Worf and his body if he were giving the orders and handing the wrenches.
Boy, Aaron Eisenberg is a really little guy. Compared to Michael Dorn and J.G. Hertzler, he is comically small in this scene. And I don't feel like...
Well, look Michael at the Dorn. Way it's shot, too. Like, it's also shot at his height.
Yeah.
So it really emphasizes the height disparity between the actors.
Yeah. And this is played for comedy because Nog is kind of caught between Martok and Worf as they discuss the injury that Martok has sustained. We find out that it was actually inflicted by Worf, and Nog is awkwardly trying to extricate himself from the conversation, which is how I feel in almost every conversation I've ever been in.
Could I just slip by?
Does everything just have to be a fucking conflict with Klingons? Like, let Nog leave the room, Martok. Like, if this were on a Klingon ship, would Nog have had to kill Martok to just, like, leave and go to the bathroom? Give me a break.
Yeah. They love their conflict.
Yeah. Martok is psyched because after a time of just throwing people off of railings at Deep Space Nine and cooling his jets, there has been word of a missing ship and a mission that's been given to him to find it. The High Council's given him command and a crew, and the mission is to go find this thing, and he wants Worf to be his XO.
Yeah, it's a, we're going to get our own ship and we're going to go do a mission as long as you can get permission from your boss kind of episode open.
Yeah. Yeah, complete with Worf eyes to theme, which is a classic throw to theme by this show and TNG.
Yeah, like a comfortable old pair of shoes.
It is very much a, I would love to have a sleepover, but I need to ask Dad first.
Shar, Dougsicles, would it be okay if Amy stayed over at my house tonight?
Kind of situation, because we do cut to Sisko's, and after, like, Worf's doing that thing where he's over-explaining the thing he's interested in doing in order to get permission. And again, like, this is 2 episodes in a row where Sisko just does not care about his crew or anything they're going through at all. He almost cuts him off and is like, fine, just go. I'm trying to read.
Like, the scene opens with Sisko going like, yeah, I'm going to say yes about this, but I'm curious, like, why you're interested.
When you get a yes, you can talk your way back into no from the person you need permission of. So it's best to just shut up after you get the yes.
Yeah. Worf manages to stay in yes territory despite getting way too wordy.
Yeah.
And what he describes is when they were all in that on that asteroid in the custody of the Jem'Hadar, and Worf was fighting Jem'Hadar all day, every day. He got to a point where he was ready to give up, ready to let them let them end him honorably. And he had this moment with Martok where they kind of wordlessly connected. I think he calls it Tova Dok.
It was a moment of Tova Dok.
Of what?
This is something that happens between warriors on the battlefield. It's like Legolas and Gimli catching each other's eyes across the battlefield.
Legolas! To already!
I'm on 17!
It's like the Robert Redford meme where he's like nodding at you and the camera's racking in.
Is that Robert Redford with the yeah. huge beard?
Yeah. Isn't it not?
What? I just thought it was some red-haired man.
Yeah, that's Robert Redford.
What movie is that?
It's Jeremiah Johnson.
Wow.
Here you go, Ben.
I never had any idea that was Robert Redford.
Yeah. It is indeed. So what Worf is describing is Martok Jeremiah Johnsoning him.
Yeah.
It's sort of a warrior's heart transplant, yeah. right? Like, because he feels his health meter restored thanks yeah. to this glance. And Sisko dismisses him with detached leave.
Yeah.
He's kind of tired of hearing any more about this.
It's a bit like what happened to Riker with the Pach, right? He's like,
it is.
He's now remanded into the Klingon military. They exchange kaplas, and I kind of felt like Worf was like anglicizing his kapla.
Kapla. Kapla.
Oh shit, dude. I thought the same thing.
Like he's kind of code switching for Sisko.
Sisko's like, L'chaim.
It's like when I go to a holiday thing at my in-law's house and I go around saying good Yontif to everyone.
It's so touristy and bad. It's one of the things that Star Trek doesn't do well when it introduces cultures and has them commingle.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, that part doesn't work. I know it's meant to be seen as a friendly greeting and end to a conversation in situations like this.
Right.
But it just comes off as very condescending.
Yeah, paternalistic.
Yeah. It would be one thing if Worf did it first, right? I think that's the diff.
Yeah. I mean, it made me think a lot about the way the Klingon language is spoken on Discovery.
Yeah.
And the way it's sort of spoken in its own accent.
Yeah, I mean, we laugh about it, but that's actually the way it should be.
I mean, I think that it's like our laughing about it is because it's weird and new, but like in this scene, for some reason, it like smashed into focus that's actually like how it would be in yeah. in reality, like if this was actually a real thing, but it's not. It's a TV show,
right?
Gul Dukat,
Dukat,
Gul Dukat.
So
we get a little scene in Quark's. It's kind of a weird after work hang where Kira is telling O'Brien and Dr. Bashir and Dax about like how the duty roster is going to work in the absence of Worf. And I kind of wished that this scene was about like, hey, Worf's not going to be here, so we're all going to have to pick up the slack. And everybody's like, what slack? The guy stays on the Defiant all the time. Like, what does he do? Like, does he even have a job around here?
It becomes more about who's going to stay on the Defiant now. Yeah, I completely agree. Like, this happens all the time in an office, and it's unfortunate. Like, it's part of the pressure that a person feels not to take a vacation or call in sick is the perception of being weak or not doing your duty as an employee, because this shit rolls downhill.
Yeah, you're not going to be considered for all the same promotions if you're out of the office some of the time. It's one of the ways the culture of work, especially in the US, kind of enforces an unhealthy way for your job to take over your life.
You do get a laundry list of things that Worf does here that are of a complete surprise to you and me, but do not surprise Dax, Bashir, and O'Brien as these tasks are being doled out.
Doing intelligence is going to be part of the deal.
Yeah.
That for some reason goes to Dr. Bashir, and everybody laughs at the idea of him being intelligent, which I thought was fun.
I thought for sure someone else would end up working with Nog on the ship to finish the repairs, and the B or C story would be having to do with that.
Right, like, which seems like a natural O'Brien thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's also some discussion of what life is going to be like for Worf on this ship, and the fact that, you know, the way it works on a Klingon bird of prey is that everybody's kind of gunning for the job of the person right above them.
Right.
And Worf will be in some peril if he's the first officer of that ship.
Worf isn't exactly taking a luxury cruise.
Adam, I'm going to have my fourth banana bread beer.
That just sounds like too much. That's too much.
Well, last episode, I drank three of them because it was a Quark's Bar episode. And we came back and I realized that there was an entire beer left in my little cooler I have next to my desk. So, I mean, come on.
As they're talking at Quark's, a couple of quote-unquote tough-looking Klingons walk through the door. And this is difficult because these guys are not who they are describing.
Well, I'd say those two definitely fall into the strong category.
They immediately like recoil in a kind of check out these badasses kind of way. But other than the sleeveless warrior costume that one of them is wearing, these guys do not read as tough to me.
This might just be a casting thing, but yeah,
you gotta cast Brian Thompson as one of these guys, right?
Yeah, that would have helped it. But I feel like we've seen him as a Klingon enough times that it would be like, is that guy we know?
Who's got the biggest arms in Star Trek?
Ooh, shit.
I feel like there is the perfect answer to this question, but I can't come up with it in the moment.
There's an episode of Voyager with The Rock in it.
Yeah. Yeah, but that we've seen up until now?
Yeah, I don't know.
Probably some of the dojo aliens that Worf works out with, right? Yeah. Like, those guys are pretty stacked.
Yeah. Odo.
I'm Mr. Bunkin.
Follows these guys in, and they're like, so are you on to these guys? Are they up to no good? And he's basically says, like, he's keeping an eye on them because they appear to be loitering with intent, but they haven't done anything yet. But he also cites the fact that one of them was wearing a necklace made out of Cardassian neck bones. And immediately Kira walks over to the table that the two Klingons have sat down at, and she says, hey, where'd you get that necklace? I've actually been looking for one of those.
Yeah, there's a Pandora store on the promenade that could really do a good bit of business selling those.
That's something I always admire about my wife. If she sees somebody wearing something that she thinks is good, she'll just ask about it.
That's nice.
Like, if I see somebody wearing a garment that I find impressive, I just turn in on myself and I go like, I wish I knew where I could get something like that, you know?
Yeah, I was the same way with my favorite sneaker. Saw people wearing them, never asked what they were. Finally, just happened upon them.
Wow.
Got lucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it looks like a Cardassian would have neck bones to spare, as if they would survive the thing that removed them. They probably have four or five neck bones that they could lose before actually dying, right?
Oh, shit. Yeah, because they, like... That was one thing that was kind of confusing to me, is that the things on his necklace are kind of like long and thin. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting that the neck, that when he says neck bones, there's some kind of bone that's in those trap things on Cardassians?
No, just in my estimation, Cardassian necks are so long and Merton Hanks-like that that you could remove the vertebrae from them, and several of them.
Yeah.
And the patient lives, probably.
What? Oh, so these were donor neck bones on this necklace.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, a Klingon would ask permission first.
Yeah, Klingons are very honorable, though.
Yeah.
So it's not long after this that Worf and Dax are walking down the hallway, and it's kind of one of those like, oh... you know, I don't want to say I don't want to say goodbye. I don't want goodbye to take too long. And Dax keeps walking with him. They go through the airlock onto the Klingon bird of prey. And Worf turns around. He's like, you really can't follow me onto this ship. Like, I got to go do this mission now. And she says, oh, I'm actually going to do the mission too.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Yeah. She sure picks her spots, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Sometimes Worf will get called out on a mission and she'll just go to his condo to yell at him. Other times she'll just come along.
Yeah.
You never know.
She makes the case that this is going to be a real shit mission. Like she sees what this episode's going to be before anyone.
Yeah.
And she wants to kind of watch his back, I think, partly. But partly also just wants to go, like, do some fun Klingon shit, I think.
Why did you not tell me?
It's more fun this way.
Yeah, the stakes don't raise for her until much later. Right. She is very much a tourist at this point.
Yeah, and she's kind of wayooning through the episode in a lot of ways. She's, like, having fun and just, like, it doesn't really matter that much what happens one way or the other.
Right.
But yeah, she's going to be the science officer on this vessel that Martok is in command of and Worf is XOing.
One of the first people that Dax meets on the Rotoran.
Dinners from New Orleans.
Is T'Vanna, and she's the engineering officer. She makes it pretty clear that this is a crew that has a pretty bad win-loss record as it comes to being out in the universe. The morale is pretty low.
Yeah. And we've known that Curzon was a super famous non-Klingon person to Klingons, but this is like the first thing that comes up between her and T'Vanna. Like,
yeah, T'Vanna's like, you know, what was it, her dad or her mom that? Oh yeah, T'Vanna's like, yeah, my mom knew Curzon Dax, and my mom was a huge slut. And Dax is like, Curzon Dax was also a huge slut. And then they kind of high five.
Yeah. Hey. Fucking, right? It's great.
Yeah, feels great.
Yeah. You know.
Love doing it as many people as possible.
Sure hope those two wore rubbers anyways.
Anyway, morale here is pretty low.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do more fucking.
Couple of nice looking ladies like us, all these handsome gentlemen around. Why don't we get down to a little bit more fucking?
Yeah. How about fewer bone necklaces and more boning? Yeah?
Yes. You fucking nailed that.
I landed on the pad, you know, like behind the pommel horse, and I'm kind of wobbling a little bit. Yeah. Wobbling into one of these things.
Technically, you landed it, though.
Yeah.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pair.
A bucket.
A pair.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state.
Oh, well, I don't use the bucket anymore.
Worf comes in and is extremely officious in that way that he gets when he's doing some Klingon stuff.
Yeah, he really looks like a guy who wants to fuck with a thermostat on the ship, the way that he did on Risa.
There's sort of the orthodoxy of Klingonness that Worf has read a lot about, but you never see other Klingons participating in, really.
Yeah.
Like, you can see that they all were raised like that, but he's the only one still acting like that.
He loves it, though. Like,
he
relishes
it.
This shit, but at the same time, like, his time... He can't help but think about the time he headed that guy on the soccer field and decapitated him, right? That can't be far from his mind.
He headed the guy in the head. The guy's head flew off.
That's how you interpreted that story, right?
Just.
Yeah. No, like he fucking smashed it. And it flew right off his head.
Yeah, I was picturing head separated at the neck.
Yeah, yep. And what's crazy is both the soccer ball and the head went into the goal, won the match.
Goal! One of these guys that we're told is one of the tough Klingons. The guy, the sleeveless guy.
Yeah.
Is the weapons officer. And he's made to bring the record of honor, the like all the battles that this ship has gone through. for Worf to look over.
You could say he's the ship's DJ, and he needs to play the record of honor. DJ, please
pick up your phone. I'm on the request line. He's doing that thing where he's got one earphone over his ear, and Worf passes him a record, and he looks at the label and gives a silent nod, like, "Yeah, I'm gonna put that on."
Yeah, except it's a record that everyone hates.
Yeah, it clears the dance floor, Adam.
Yeah.
It's
air supply.
Yeah. It's also brought over on what looks like an iPad in like a bumper case that you would give a kid, you know?
Or an old.
Yeah, like the iPad case that's like way more built up than a normal iPad case.
Right.
This is for somebody who's definitely going to drop it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not great news. It's this is a ship that is deeply in the doldrums in terms of not having any recent victories to speak of. No victories in the last 7 months, and the crew is not feeling great about themselves.
This episode has got such Office Space vibes to me, and by that I don't mean the movie, I just mean the place. Like, I think everyone has known a person like Slouchy Helmsman who, like, sighs before turning his office chair around to answer a question.
If you're looking for victories, you won't find any.
Like, these attitudes feel so grounded in reality. This is not a Klingon problem. It's just a team of people problem.
What would you say you do here?
Yeah, it's a workplace vibe that is a workplace of failure.
Yeah. What you want to do to build esprit de corps in any workplace is you want to start singing karaoke as soon as possible. And when the Warriors anthem is cued, no one's heart is in it.
You know,
Ben, and that's a bad sign.
Klingons love to sing songs about how they won't take a dump without a plan.
Uh-huh. We make plans and then we take dumps.
This is a thing that Worf tries to get going, and I think about 50% of the Klingon officers are willing to sing along with this song.
Sometimes I doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion.
You know what the problem is, Ben? You can't sing karaoke without blood wine. Hmm. Everyone's stone cold sober, right?
Yeah. And nobody in the leadership team of Martok and Worf thought to remedy that situation.
Yeah.
Crucially.
Yeah.
Because we find out later that there are 3 barrels of blood wine aboard, but they were brought aboard by Dax.
3 barrels.
She brings the party. She knows what's up.
She knows how to get down with Klingons.
Yeah.
She has dinner with them, and she's complaining about the food, but saying that the blood wine will really improve it, and that really brightens the spirits. And this scene is cross-cut with a Captain Exo conference where Martok is for the first time looking over this record of battle and finding that the crew that he has been given is pretty shitty.
These personnel reports read like prison records.
And I wondered what was going on at the Klingon High Council when they, like, wasn't Martok the top general before he was imprisoned on the asteroid?
Yeah, I thought so.
Why give him this garbage ship with a bunch of incompetent crew people for this mission? Like, what's the gambit?
I don't know.
It seems mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that Klingons are mean to each other.
Yeah, we wouldn't survive long in this culture.
Oh, you hurt my feelings. I'm gonna feel bad about myself for the next 3 days.
Do they ever make much of the thing that Dax knows more about Klingon culture than Worf? Like, is that ever really leaned into as a conflict between them? Like, that's part of the attraction, and I get that, and I like that.
Yeah.
But this whole Curzon-Dax thing, like, Curzon seems like he's more of an expert than Worf, and that reads. Like, I'm ready to believe that.
I think that they've said in the past that through her memories of Curzon, Dax technically spent more time with Klingons than Worf.
She never does that thing that goes like, "I'm surprised you didn't know that." And that's good.
That is good. Yeah, she is not. She's not Klingon hipster.
Yeah.
She's not like, I saw the Klingons when they were playing like little, like 40-person clubs. And
I saw Klingons, you know, back in Star Trek 3, all right?
Yeah, now the Klingons are playing stadiums. I mean, like, it's cool that other people are kind of getting hip to this, but I kind of, you know, I used to be on much more intimate terms with the Klingons.
This conversation between Worf and Martok has to do with this mood of the ship and why it's so bad.
They expect defeat, and that is dangerous.
And the thing is, they agree that getting a W would go a long, long way. Like, getting drunk, one. And B, getting a victory would be awesome. But Martok doesn't think that the crew is ready for any kind of battle. They're at an impasse, Ben. They're at Klingonger heads.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
What are you doing now?
The question that the episode sort of poses at some point is whether Martok is scared or if he's up to something.
Right.
Because they keep coming to these points where, like, they could do the dangerous adventure thing that your average Klingon would always pick, or do the kind of prudent Starfleet kind of thing. Like, are we going to go through this nebula that might be full of ticks? Are we going to go around it and add a day to our journey? Going to go around it. Like, every time Martok is given a chance to engage in adventure, he kind of steers the ship away from it. And it, for a long time in this episode, feels like he has acknowledged this crew could really use like an easy W, just like this tick doesn't even know we're here. We're weapons hot. We could just take it out really quickly and make everybody feel like, all right, we're not total losers. And he keeps not doing that thing in a way that feels like the episode is sort of leading up to Martok is playing chess to everybody else's checkers.
Yeah, it really inflates the tension throughout the ep. And it's an interesting thing to do, to pre-establish what the goal of a character should be and then have the character act in contravention of their stated goal without giving a reason.
Yeah, I really liked it.
But not to skip to the end, but I think you need to pay it off in such a way that is satisfying. Like,
right.
And we can save that part of the conversation for later. But when you're spending 40 minutes of an episode being like, oh, this guy's playing chess, and it turns out he really was playing checkers the whole time, that's not right. great for a character.
I know. Yeah.
The shit's chess. It ain't checkers.
The counterpoint to Martok is interesting in his own right. It's Lisket, the guy with the neck bone necklace. And he is also kind of a coward, I think. Like Martok's cowardice is learned through the trauma of having been on the Jem'Hadar prison planet. And Lisket is kind of set up to be, is that, you know, like, he's so far under that he and Martok never have a conflict, but like every time he and Dax are in a room, they're at odds, and he's a total shit to Dax.
The bad look for Lisket is assuming that Dax got in her position by sleeping her way there. Like, it's the sexual politics of their argument are pretty foul.
On this trip, my bed is as empty as yours, Lisket. Except mine is empty by choice.
And Lisket he's like so defeated, and so he has such a profound inferiority complex that he is sort of projecting his own cowardice onto Martok. And the conflict that the episode is setting up at this point is like, does the shoe fit? Is Martok actually the coward that he seems to be?
As we go around the room in this mess hall, like, the blood wine is flowing and the tongues are loosening. And you get a little scene with Cornyn here, the sleeveless warrior. And he's the guy who believes they're all cursed. There seems to be this type of character in a lot of submarine films. and like in Jaws and stuff. Like there's the guy that that knows they're all going to die and nothing's going to convince him otherwise, that they're just a bad luck ship.
I wish the Navy let people grow great big braided beards so that you could just see when somebody was the guy that thinks everyone's cursed.
You know that Captain Lou Albano beard is crunchy, right?
Make sure it's not lumpy.
You just know it. It's been in too much gawk.
You see what I mean? You still got lumps in it.
It probably got two gawks in it.
It's so nasty.
You got to have sanitary conditions.
It is really nuts for a people that love gawk as much as these guys do to have the long hair and the long beards that Klingons almost always have.
I thought for sure that Worf would take his hair tie out and shake it out a little bit on this mission.
Nah.
He looks good when he lets his hair down.
Worf's keeping it tight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they come across a tick, and it's kind of a target of opportunity. It's kind of a perfect, kill with no consequences. And instead of doing that, Martok chooses to stay cloaked and continue on their course to look for this missing ship.
Yeah, it's a real perfect situation.
And this is really starting to grind Worf's gears, and as he's sitting there stewing about it, Dax calls him over and they have like one of those hushed, like they're just in Dax's cubicle in the office conversations, but they don't want everybody else to hear.
Yeah.
And she's saying like, if you don't start like engaging in some of these little battles and getting these easy victories, this crew is never going to work together. And Worf is like, listen, I know we have an inappropriate workplace relationship, but like, you can't just talk this shit to me right now.
It'd be funny if Dax were doing all of this wordlessly, like she's trying to tova-doke him, and he's just not, he's not making eye contact or doing it right. It's weird, like, what Dax is saying is, like, you're still thinking like a Federation officer. Like, you don't have to prescribe to those rules of engagement. Like, it was fine to shoot that tick, and you should have. And by not doing that, you're putting your own life in danger because the way things work around here is a subordinate has a right to kill you if you fuck things up. And that is one fuck up down.
Yeah. This all turns into just infighting among the crew. Lisket goes on a rant drunkenly in the mess hall about how the Jem'Hadar are way better, stronger, and smarter than Klingons because they have no honor. He's saying we have honorable battles with Cardassians because Cardassians fight for a reason and the Jem'Hadar just fight because they're programmed that way. And that actually makes them a much stronger enemy than us.
He kind of Hudsons through this scene, right? This is the breakdown.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. And that turns into a mess hall brawl that Dax walks away from and encounters Worf in the hallway. She's like phasered to break the fight up, and Worf catches her and he's like, what's going on? Like, it seems like you're really upset. And she's like, yeah, like the crew is about to like kill each other over the fact that they have not gotten a win yet. And, I think you really need to look at that as a serious issue.
I wonder to what degree a phaser is frowned upon on a Klingon ship, which is known for like melee weapons if you were to challenge someone, right? I bet that's not a good look.
Yeah, like setting anything to stun on a Klingon ship is probably looked down upon.
Yeah.
Dax is pissed at Worf because she's arguing that like these soldiers are coming apart at the seams because there's a leadership vacuum. Like Martok doesn't seem to give a shit about their morale or anything. And like, it's interesting because like they have, like all anyone has talked about since they got on this ship has been the morale issue and the fact that these guys need a win, including Martok. Like Martok is like really worried at the beginning of this episode about how many losses these guys have and what a bad service record the ship has as a whole.
And it's weird, right? Because we know contextually, and so does Worf, that Dax is talking about Martok, but she's also talking about Worf.
Yeah.
When she talks about this leadership vacuum.
And it's all really tough. Like, all these bonds are tough to break because, like, Worf and Martok's trust in each other comes from their time in POW camp. Like their bond is, like, really deep and in a way that is hard to argue against.
It's so deep that you would imagine at some point there would ever be a conversation between Dax and Martok. Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
That Dax prescribes to that very clear chain of command going on the ship where she only has the right to talk to Worf.
It is interesting. And I think that that's like something I don't often think about with Dax is that she's in a chain of command herself. Like she is just as much a military-minded person as anyone.
I wish this episode put her to a choice between Martok and Worf in this way.
Right.
Like, if death is really on the line, if they really are in danger of either a mutiny on the ship or being destroyed by the Jem'Hadar, like, that's a moment that I would be really interested in seeing. Like, who does she go to? Is it Worf or is it Martok if the rubber really hit the road?
Yeah.
We don't know, and this episode doesn't tell us.
I think
this episode suggests it would be Worf.
I think that's a great point. And like mutiny is very much an impending issue. T'Vanna comes up to Dax at one point and is like, "Hey, when it pops off, like stick with me. I'll make sure that they don't kill you."
Hands her the sharpened toothbrush that she's kept under her bunk. Like,
yeah.
They are going to be prison riot buddies.
I would have really loved to see the ship turn into full-on mutiny, like every man for himself combat, and have T'Vanna toss Dax a Bat'leth and be extremely gratified to see that Dax really knows what she's doing with a Bat'leth.
There are many similarities between a Klingon ship and jail. They don't shy away from those. To see the ship descend into a full-blown prison riot, I think, would be very satisfying.
Yeah. Instead, we just have to watch them gamble over packs of mackerel.
Yeah.
Morn.
Dear sweet. Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Have a time.
Cornyn gets to return to duty, and he does that thing where, I don't know, like when a pitcher hits a batter in baseball, there's that thing where is there going to be retaliation?
Yeah.
Is the other team going to hit one of the other team's batters? And like when Cornyn gets back on the bridge, he walks right at Leskett before he is convinced to turn around and go back to his station.
And they find the ship that they're looking for. It's a D7.
Yeah, and it's been pretty badly fucked up, and it's been drifting for a long time. The problem is it has drifted itself into Cardassian space.
Over the line!
So it complicates the situation for Martok, but for no one else.
A very un-Jem'Hadar kill, right?
Yeah.
Like Martok is really worried that this is a trap, that there are 5 Jem'Hadar ships just waiting for them to go attempt to begin rescue operation. And that seemed like a really reasonable fear to me, because I don't know of a lot of examples that we've seen of the Jem'Hadar like badly crippling a ship and then leaving it alone to drift in space into their territory.
I don't know who says it, but someone counters that argument with, well, if there are 5 of them out there, they could attack us right now. And what would be the difference?
Right. At that point.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out.
Martok is extremely reticent to cross into Dominion/Cardassian space and has been specifically ordered by the High Council not to. So he's arguing we're not going to do that. And there are a few beats of argument and, like, you know, more cubicle whispering between Dax and Worf about, you know, what are we going to do about this and stuff. And eventually Worf arrives at the conclusion that the only way to circle this square is to challenge Martok for command of the ship. And rather than do this directly to Martok's face, he goes and takes his seat at the con when Martok is not on the bridge And he's getting ready to do this when the dissident faction of the crew present themselves to him to argue their case. And they're like, Martok is a coward and a piece of shit. And Worf announces, hey, we're gonna go rescue these guys on this other ship.
It's fun that it's Ordokin or T'Vanna's lover that leads the support faction behind Worf.
Yeah, I liked that. And then and then Martok, like, almost drunkenly stumbles on, like, I don't know that he's supposed to be drunk, but he stumbles onto the bridge like, what's going on here?
Did you think before this fight happened that Worf would kill him? Because Worf has a body count, especially on Klingon ships. We know this.
Yeah.
He's killed people on Kronosh. He's killed people on other ships. Happens all the time.
In the coldest of blood.
Yeah.
And this...
I actually saw this. I thought for sure he would kill him.
Yeah, but I think that Worf's strategy here was to get this fight going and find a way to make it look good and then lose.
The only reason he does that, though, is if he's sure that Martok is playing chess.
Yeah.
To not know that and to possibly die for your guess, I think is insane.
I guess that must mean that they really do know each other that well because of their time in prison together.
Yeah, that's the Tovadoc at work.
Yeah.
Tovadoc.
It works.
So in this fight, Martok stabs Worf in the chest, and the crew celebrates his great victory.
Yeah, they start chanting Martok.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, like, the celebration of Martok's win here pivots neatly into a newly emboldened Martok who's ready to save the ship.
Well, he's emboldened because they're under attack by a Jem'Hadar ship all of a sudden. And I really wish that the direction the episode had gone was he beats Worf and then is like, now let's go save those boys, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like the external threat is a bit of a deus ex machina.
Yeah, and the way that Dax and Worf slink away from this moment, I think, is like, do they not need a science officer anymore?
Well, they take their pause to like, enjoy the fact that everybody's singing a song together. But yeah, like this further makes the case that Worf and Dax were tourists on this mission.
Yeah. So it appears as though Martok has his groove back.
Yeah. Got that mojo.
Back on Deep Space Nine in Ops, Bashir and O'Brien.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
Are continuing to complain about the division of Worf's labor when Martok's ship decloaks. The victory has happened off screen. He's destroyed the Tick. He has saved the survivors from the Klingon D7. He needs to transport them over for medical attention. The ship needs repairs, but also you better make sure that the kegs of blood wine are ready. Because they're ready to party.
Yeah. A big W for Martok.
And you don't want to blow a blood wine keg if you've got Klingons in your bar.
Yeah.
It's going to be a bad look.
You got to know what you're doing when you tap a keg of blood wine.
Yeah, that's pretty dangerous. You know that tap is proprietary, too, and probably really sharp.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is there a nitrogen tank that comes with a keg of blood wine?
The keg of blood wine is like 60 strips of latinum, but the pump deposit is like 500.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things that like you think is going to be really awesome to have at a party, but you wind up worrying all the way through the party that somebody's going to break it and you're going to be stuck holding the bag.
Yeah, that sucks. Does Quark charge for the kegs of blood wine? Where are they getting the blood wine?
Oh, yeah, who knows? He probably has the blood wine concession on Deep Space Nine.
Don't you wish that the Klingon restaurant was still open and that cool man. Klingon restaurateur could be part of this?
Yeah, that guy was great.
Yeah.
Wearing his white Klingon pajamas.
Yeah.
The button on the episode takes place in Quark's, and it is a conversation between Martok and Worf about family affiliation, the There was a brief mention when Worf was getting ready to get on board this ship of the fact that he was not wearing his traditional Miss Klingon sash, and specifically the sigil of the House of Moog. And Martok suggests, hey, like, there's no such thing as the House of Moog, but I would be really delighted if you would wear my logo, the logo of the House of Martok. And I think the implication of this is that Worf gets to return to honored warrior status if he accepts this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it doesn't seem like he needs to slink around Klingons anymore if he's in a house in good standing.
Well, it definitely means if he pins Martok's... If Worf puts Martok's pin on his baldric, they're going steady.
Yeah.
That much we know. But this part really made me sad, because it's not that the House of Martok pin joins the House of Moog pin on the baldric. It's that he replaces the Moog pin with it.
Yeah, it's
I
really
didn't like
sad.
That at all.
It sucks. It's like...
Who remembers the House of Moog now? It's certainly not Kern.
Who? I'm sorry. I've never heard that name.
Right. Like... Without Worf keeping that candle lit, that's it, right? Like, House of Moog is dead.
And it seems like it's an easy choice for him, but it seems crazy
it
that he
that
just
easy.
Takes the fucking logo off the sash and puts the other logo on. Like, your dad was done wrong, man.
Let's talk about if you... Let's answer the question, did you like the episode? Because now I think it's time to really... Like, I think so much of... whether or not you like the ep is about this final scene.
You really want to do this here, now, okay, let's do it!
This felt a lot tonally like that ep where Quark sells guns and Dax forgives in the end like nothing happened. Mm-hmm. I think this is a extremely consequential ending and character-defining moment for Worf. And this episode treats it like it's significant, but not as significant as it actually is.
Right. It treats it with the same significance as the previous episode treats the who cares, like, what goes on with the Ferengi economy, you know?
Yeah. What is with this pattern of forgetting the first 40 minutes of an ep? Because for 40 minutes of this ep, Martok was awful and deserved to die for what he was doing. And because everything happened off screen, like the success of what happened with the Rotoran, like, I guess Martok is in good standing again. He's a good captain. He has the love of his crew. These are assumptions that we make. We are not given proof of these things. And I guess here's the thing, is Worf wagging the story dog by accepting the pin at the end instead of us being given proof that it is a good decision for him to make by the actions that we see Martok take.
Martok is not given to us as an example of a Klingon in whose path you would want to follow in this episode. And maybe you can get there just by, like, citing his reputation up until this point. Like, he's been talked about as, like, the number one general and, like, Gowron's right-hand man a bunch of times. But yeah, like, I really wanted to like this episode, and I think that the end really fumbles the ball on an episode that could have been great.
I mean, this is a recency bias thing for a character that we know has had a long and distinguished career, but, like, I like generals who... don't get caught and thrown in jail and who aren't bad captains. That's just my personal opinion, you know?
Jesus.
Give me something to like about Martok at this moment in time. I think that's where I'm at. I think he's a character in need of redemption of the kind that's a little greater than off screen.
Wow.
Okay?
Okay.
Does he get to come back to the station? Is he back to throwing people off the railing, or does he get to go and Gull Dukat his way around the galaxy in his in his bird of prey.
I think he's a resident of the station. I don't think that this is his ship. I think it was his ship for this mission.
It was a loner.
Yeah.
Huh. He's got to return it with a full tank of gach. It can be very expensive if you don't.
Oh, yeah. I like to prepay for the gach. I know that it's like slightly more expensive than what you pay at the pump, but I just don't want to have to think about that.
$9 a gallon that you can get if you don't do that, right?
Right, yeah.
That's how to get you.
I would much rather just return it however it is without having to like go to the trouble of hitting the gach station on my way back.
Well, one part of our show that has a strict no returns policy is our priority one messages. You want to see what we have over there?
Yeah.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of priority one messages here. The first one is of a promotional nature, I believe. Although the email says it's of a...
Yeah, that's weird,
it says,
right?
Personal message in the subject and promotional in the body. So, I don't know. But here's the message. It says, to the Jim Shimodas, sweating for Kalesh, to the Rascals plotting revenge, to the Plovimo files even, to Shrimp Kolgar, to the Fourth Shift, getting it done, to 1-800-GUINAN, to the Pennington School, to Pride of DeSoto, to Jem Hagdar, blaze it, to the Cruisers, to the Bosom, to the Ass Chat, Exocooks, delicious people, to Chill Hangers, to Meme Daddies, to Pets of DeSoto, to Captain's Log, to the Mods, to Daddy Austin, and to Ben, Adam, and Rob's most of all. Happy holidays. I love you all. LLAP.
You know what? That message should just replace our end credits to the show.
Yeah, that's really... That's the tie and
comprehensive there.
Yeah. And the call to action is happy holidays. Hop on Facebook and get some FOD love, everyone.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, maybe the only good thing about Facebook is...
FOD love.
It's FOD love. Ben, our second priority one message is of a personal nature. It is from Caroline. It's for Ben and Adam.
Hey, that's us.
Message goes like this. Finally, feeling flush enough to flush 100 scarves. Just to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for hours upon hours of quote-unquote quality viewing. And that's actually $132.55 Canadian scarves. You're welcome.
Oh, wow. Canadian scarves are warmer than American scarves. Yeah, tell you that much.
While I have the floor, is this my camera? I want to know why Ro Laren isn't cast in the Picard series. What a missed opportunity. Thoughts?
Damn.
Caroline, doing one of my favorite kinds of personal message. That's the question for the hosts. And I'm with her. I'm with Caroline on this. Ro is one of my favorite... I mean, I shouldn't call Ro a minor character, but unfortunately, with the amount of episodes she's in... I mean, kind of true, right? One of my favorite minor characters in TNG is Ro Laren.
Yeah, she was a series regular for a few seasons. I wouldn't...
Michelle Forbes, still like a working actor and awesome.
I wouldn't totally discount it, though. Like,
yeah.
I think that one of the things that's really cool about this series is that they've been shooting for months and months now.
Yeah.
And like they are popping surprises every time a new trailer drops. So
yeah.
I would say there is nothing that is impossible. And while I think Adam and I both wholeheartedly agree with you, Caroline, that Ensign Ro, probably now Supreme Admiral Ro of all she surveys,
right,
should be in this series. But she, you know, she may be, she may not be, but you know, hopefully somebody from inside the pocket is listening. We found out recently that the team behind Discovery has definitely got its greatest Discovery listeners among it. And so hopefully the Picard series people are also listening to the greatest Discovery and the greatest Generation.
I'm looking over Michelle Forbes's film and TVography. She's currently in a show. She's in a series right now called Treadstone, 9 episodes in its first season.
Oh, shit, really? That's the Jason Bourne series.
Yeah, and I mean, that appears to be in the can, like, and done. Let's see, the last episode of the season comes out December 17th, 2019, so that production has been over for months, and there's nothing on her... on her Wikipedia or her IMDb that indicates a TV project after that. So, I mean, there's an opening there, at least schedule-wise. You can't rule it out based on her work on something else is what I'm trying to say.
What has been announced, you can't rule it out based on that.
There are no bigger fans of Michelle Forbes than me and Ben, so I hope... I hope she makes an appearance. That'd be rad.
Is that Treadstone show supposed to be any good?
I don't have cable television, so you need the USA Network to watch it, don't you?
Oh, man.
And that is that.
There it goes.
I mean, I imagine it will eventually be streamable, and that's the moment I will be watching. Because we stand for Michelle Forbes.
Yeah, we stand Michelle Forbes, and I'm a fan of the Bourneverse.
Well, thanks, Caroline, for spinning Ben and I off into that tangent. It was fun.
That was fun. If you'd like to spin us off into a tangent, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And that is a great way to help support the production of this program, no matter what kind of scarves you're dropping on it.
Gotta get that gold press latch.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
For two episodes in a row, I'm going with Cisco.
Wow.
What is he doing? Where has he been? And I guess I'm talking about Avery Brooks here, too. This episode directed by LeVar Burton. I mean, if you're LeVar Burton or anyone else, I think you've got to relish the opportunity to direct an Avery Brooks. He's barely in this episode, and he's barely in the last one.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if he's doing something right now in 97.
Yeah.
Like, is this when American History X came out? Like, was he shooting that?
I don't know. Was he?
1998 is when American History X came out. So maybe he was working on that.
Shit.
Anyway, his treatment of Worf in his office is just emblematic of a kind of detachment I'm getting from him.
Yeah.
That seems very Shimoda-esque to me. If I give it to him a third time in the next episode, it means I cannot give him a Shimoda in the fourth episode. So we're wading into that territory.
Yeah, I guess so.
What about you, Ben?
My drunk Shimoda is whoever at the Klingon Department of Defense decided to give this garbage ship to General Martok. Like, I think that a military apparatus needs to anticipate these kinds of issues. The trauma of having been in prison camp. Martok himself is aware of it, right? Like, he talks right at the beginning of the episode with Bashir about how he, like, needs to get back in fighting shape because being in jail fucked him up in more ways than just emotionally.
Yeah.
And it seems like if you are the warrior race that knows how to do the best war, you should be able to factor that kind of thinking into the choices you make surrounding staffing and deployment of materiel. And like pairing the most broken general with the most broken ship seems like a bad choice.
Yeah, not exactly set up for success, right?
No, and I wondered what that was about. Like, if Martok was the Pex bad boy of the Klingon world in the way that Nog is on this show, and, like, it was, like, an ongoing bit to give him, like, the worst shit all the time and expecting him to do okay with it.
Right.
That would be one thing, but, man, like, seeing this guy who all we've been told is, like, he's, like, the best warrior, he's, like, the creme de la creme of what Klingons hold most dear, treated like shit.
It's really, like, it's hat on head in a weird way, right? Like, there's the expectation that he's playing chess when he's not. There's the expectation that he's just being fucked with by Gowron when he's not.
It is hard to untangle what we are meant to make of what happens to him in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It is a total mystery. Like, I can't even guess what's going to happen to him in the next couple seasons.
Me neither.
But what's going to happen to us in the next episode?
That is a great question, Adam. The next episode is season 5, episode 22, Children of Time. Cisco and the Defiant crew must choose between the lives they have always known and the lives of their own descendants.
Oh. Oh.
Hmm.
Okay.
Cisco probably is like, lost my wife. Probably choose the life of my descendants, right?
Wow. Sisko sounds like he's going to be in an episode, more than one scene. Pretty heavy lift here.
That'd be great for him.
Well, one choice that we need to make is how we're going to watch that episode. To know, we must consult the Game of Buttholes Rule of the Prophets, where currently our runabout is on square 19. Two ahead of that is a space butthole, and a few squares after that is a great big banger.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Roll that bone, Adam.
Roll.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Ben, I have rolled a 6.
Wow.
Which has taken us well past both of those obstacles and landed us on square 25. Square 25 is a regular old episode.
Wow. And in close proximity to a Naked Now episode, which would really test our ability to take baths at the same time.
Oh, no, not again. God.
You know what?
You know what? You edited that show so well. It needs to be... you should be exalted for that, for the work that you did on that show.
It was fine. It was fun.
I hope no one gets that task ever again. Especially me.
It took a little fiddling, but we got there. Adam, you know what takes no fiddling at all is spreading around the thank yous at the end of an episode of The Greatest Generation. We have so many people to thank. We have the people who recommend the show to a friend or loved one, who contribute to the show on a monthly basis. The folks who go on their podcatcher and rate and review the show with 5 stars and recommend it to strangers all over the world.
You know what I did this morning? I realized that I have been a hypocrite, Ben, because I realized that I have not rated or reviewed another podcast like in like a year or two. It's been a long time. I took 5 minutes this morning and I opened up my Overcast and I was like, what are the shows I'm listening to right now? Picked 5 of them. I left 5 reviews.
There you go.
That's the currency. Like that's an easy, fast thing to do. And it's really meaningful for the shows to accumulate those.
You know, like when you start to see, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 reviews, it seems like, oh, like I don't need to pile on here. But like the difference between 2,000 reviews and 10,000 reviews is immeasurable.
Right.
And that happens one review at a time. So if you are in a position to leave one of those, if you haven't done it yet, we would really, really appreciate it if you did so.
We've always thought that The Greatest Generation was a 2,000 review show with a 10,000 review beauty. So so go over there and get us to 10,000. I think we should be a 10,000 review show, Ben.
I like that idea.
It's not up to me, though.
I like it when I hear you say it.
No matter how many reviews I leave for our shows, it just won't get us to 10,000.
I think we had 1,000 reviews when we had like 5,000 listeners. And now we have like 2,400 reviews or something like that. We have a lot more than 5,000 listeners, guys.
Yeah.
A lot more than 10. Like, get on it.
Take 5 minutes.
No lazy FODs.
Yeah. Well, you know who is who's not a lazy FOD? It's Bill Tilly. He's out there. He's making trading cards about every episode we make. You can find him on Twitter at BillTilly1973.
You know who else is great, Adam? Is Adam Ragusea. He makes all of the original music for this show. Of course, based on the original theme song for this show by Dark Materia. Both of those people are very nice to us. And Adam Ragusea now has a smash hit YouTube cooking channel. You just go on YouTube and you search Adam Ragusea, or probably white wine or season my cutting board. And any of those will probably kick back results that will help you learn to cook better.
That's a t-shirt idea for his YouTube channel, right?
Yeah.
Season my cutting board. And then just an arrow pointing down to the crotch.
I do not want anyone to think my crotch is a cutting board.
Yeah. Yeah. Does
It's a surfboard, Adam.
I think...
A surfboard.
I think everyone knows it could use some seasoning, though, right?
Yeah. Because I'm seasoned, haters give me them salty looks.
Mm. You have a rhyme for every occasion.
Yep. An occasion for every rhyme.
Were those all the credits?
Yeah, probably.
Well, with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which has to make an awful choice. It sounds like between family and friends. Like, I know what I would choose. I think I know what I have chosen.
You got to have sanitary conditions.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Audience supported.